All right, hello and welcome to the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about all things football in Portugal. You're joined by myself, Barney, and as always, I'm joined by my brother, Albert. How are you doing, Albert? How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Did you almost say...
Albert, yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. But no, I'm good. I come with good news, right? Some people may have been following my brief kind of... stories about my football playing exploits. Well, I scored at the weekend, gentlemen. I scored a goal from my own half on a seven-a-side pitch. Some would say it looked like a cross, you know, like a long ball into the box that was missed by everybody, including the keeper. Others, you know, maybe they just don't understand the technical quality that went into a goal like that. That's my first goal of 2025. And I think I went the whole of 2024 without scoring. So it's quite a big moment.
Seriously, Albert, was it an actual shot? Was it?
No, absolutely not. Hoofing it from... I was playing centre back. I just hoofed it.
Never admit that. No, it's a shot. It's always a shot.
Yeah, we should welcome to the podcast Andrew as well. Andrew Batista, nice to have you on again.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure as always.
I'm trying to think if... I don't think I've scored a goal. I think I would be that sort of player who would have an eye out for the keeper of his line, though. I don't know about you, Andrew, but I like to think I've got that in me.
I'm usually the keeper. So.
All right, well, we've got a lot to get through this episode. Before we crack on, though, we should remind listeners that this is going to be the first week that we release our Patreon exclusive episode, which with a refresh. It's going to be a bit more different from the last one. We're going to have some more news stories, a bit more in-depth chat about some of the things that come up in this main podcast that we don't get time to expand on. So for just £1 a month, listeners can join our Patreon and get that exclusive episode every week. But let's get on with the football, guys. I feel like I've been in the drive. You know, this is the furthest I've gone with.
Can I quickly just add a little teaser, Barney, for the Patreon-only podcast?
Oh, yeah,
because, please. You know, as people may know now, we've spiced it up a bit. We're discussing more kind of exciting topics. And the listeners may or may not know or may not have seen Sergio Conceição. What is he up to in Italy? Well, starting fights with his own players may be one of those things that we discussed. But I'll just leave that little teaser there. We'll come back to that if anyone listens to that bonus episode.
That's all to come. So keep an eye out for that and join our Patreon if you want to hear that episode. But let's start with this week's football. A good weekend. I think there was some good results, some surprising results. A win, a draw, and a loss for the big three. So maybe we'll start with perhaps the most controversial out of all of those results. And it will give us an opportunity to talk about Casapia as well, who were our team of the informed team of the moment last week as well, where they beat Benfica 3-1 at home. The last time Casapia beat Benfica was the league's first ever season, I think, back in the 1930s. I think that's right. And that's when Casapia were in the top flight, but I think it's been very rare that they've been in a top flight since then. So, an amazing game. I mean, we've talked a lot about Benfica, obviously, week after week. We haven't given Casapia the praise they deserve, though we have hyped them up a little bit. I don't know where you want to start, gentlemen, if anyone's got really wants to sort of go to town on Casapia and talk us through about this incredible win, really, and like a huge moment for them. Maybe let's start with you, Albert, because the three attackers got the goals, Moreira, Cassiano, Livinol, and this was a historic win for Casapia.
Yeah, I mean, and how good is it to see Cassiano being a big influence at another club in Portugal? I mean, we've seen him do it at different clubs around the league, Vizela and Estoril and other clubs, and he's a senior player, but he still has so much influence, and I really love seeing him back up that influence with not just sort of leadership qualities, but also ability on the pitch. I mean, his goal was a fantastic finish. His goal kind of came out a little bit out of nowhere, just a defensive mishap from Benfica. He gets the one chance and takes it. Because, you know, it is worth flagging that it did start according to plan for Benfica. They got the penalty. They went 1-0 up. And perhaps that's one of the most impressive parts of this performance with Kasapia, was that element of not giving up when going 1-0 down against by far the biggest team in the league, believing in their ability, sticking to their game plan, which they were greatly rewarded for. The football, I thought, was very effective. It was, you know, this was, you were looking at a group of players who weren't intimidated at all by anything that they were coming up against. Clearly, they believe in the manager so much. Clearly, they believe in each other as well, which is really good to see. Like I said, that equalizing goal was excellent. The second from Nuno Moreira. I mean, what I was thinking watching that goal was, we just watched Carreras for Benfica have a bit of a masterclass against Lamine Yamal, against Barcelona in the Champions League, but he couldn't hack it against a fellow Spanish winger in Larrazabal, who really kind of tore him apart in that moment. Not necessarily the whole game, but certainly he couldn't deal with him then. And yeah, my kind of takeaway from the whole game was just, I know how good Kasapia have been. I know how good the manager is, but even I wouldn't have predicted this result. I probably would have seen it as a step too far. But clearly, none of their players saw it that way. Clearly, the manager didn't see it that way. Andrew, I wonder if you agree with that, because how, or whether you think a result like this has been coming, that kind of big statement result. Because I think they've been doing very well, but to get this kind of result against Benfica, it's important just to say how much of a big step up that is from their previous wins, which have been good in and of themselves.
Yeah, I think you can see the way they've been improving. I mean, I've said some disparaging stuff about Kasapi in the past,
On this podcast, no less.
on this podcast, yeah, and particularly last season, I really didn't like watching them play. But this season, you know, if facts change, opinions change. You know what I mean? That's just how it
Absolutely.
works. And the fact is that they are really good now. João Paredes come in and he's doing a great job. You can see there's sort of better patterns of play. They're still very defensively sound, which has always been a hallmark of this Kasapia team, you know, for years now. But now they're also much more efficient and they are better in transition. They do a lot of good things off the ball. And I thought what they did really well against Benfica was limit them to really low XG chances. They were taking a lot of shots from outside of the box, which isn't something that Benfica do that often. So they kind of had to figure out a way to take shots because they just couldn't come up with the chances. I just want to back you up on that Larrazabal comment. He was really good. He really, I think most of the game really, he was all over Carreras on the left. And overall, just a great game. I do want to just highlight, I know we haven't really touched on Benfica yet, but the António Silva pass. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that António Silva really struggles with, not just his defensive traits, but that kind of thing on the ball. He makes these kind of mistakes, and it was a big mistake that.
Yeah, I think we will come to Benfica in a second, because yeah, we do need to talk about that. I just wanted to sort of follow on you guys and just heap a bit more praise, because I think, yeah, Andrew, I think you make a good point about how the Kasapia were frustrating to watch last season. You know, and their whole time in the top division, they have sort of kept to this 3-4-3 formation despite having several different managers. The thing I like about this iteration of them under João Pereira, who, by the way, I know I say it every week, but he's, you know, he's 32 years old. He's been managing since he's 30. The thing I really like is those wing back positions, and I think, you know, because that's where they're arguably the most talent is. You know, Leonardo Lello hasn't been as good as he was when they first came up, and he started to see a bit more, seen a bit more form for him. But Larrazabal is, yeah, one of those players that I think. Well, he's one of those fullbacks who, you know, when he's getting further forward and pushing the other fullback back, that's when he's at his best. And finally, the goalkeeper, Siqueira, who I think has been a really good pickup, and that's helped them added a bit of stability to defence, which has been so good. So yeah, I think that this is a, I think we were both you both sort of mentioned it, but I think essentially it's confidence. Yeah, they've been on a bit of a run, and then when these games come up, particularly at home against one of the big three, perhaps you don't always see that belief, and but they do have belief at the moment, and they're riding high. And I think, yeah, I think they're really good for their win. I guess then we should come around to the mess that is Benfica. I think the silver era, as Andrew said, is, maybe that symbolizes a few more things, right? Because, you know, António Silva, and some of these other players, have gone from that title winning side under Schmidt, just unstoppable, to looking wobbly all over the place, looking like they haven't got many ideas. Fans obviously absolutely distraught after this result, of course. Talking like there was that a lot of conversation between them and Bruno Lage. I don't know if either of you two know a bit more than me, but it seems to be the case that I don't know, there just seems to be a lot of discontent in the Benfica camp at the moment. How do you see them bouncing back from this, and what do you think is going to become in the aftermath of this sort of defeat?
Well, it's a mess, isn't it? So it's Benfica once again have found themselves in a mess, which is unfortunate for the fan base and for the club. I mean, I look back to when Roger Schmidt left and Bruno Lage came in and didn't necessarily love or hate the appointment, but I saw it as kind of safe pair of hands, maybe regalvanize the group, start getting the players' confidence back. And I think it was a positive start, definitely, under Lage, but we're just seeing problems creep in again. Problems with team selection, substitutions made at the right time, all that kind of stuff. Using the players to the best of their ability, whether he's improving players. I mean, these are all things that it's quite hard for us to discuss, I admit, because we're not on the training ground and it's hard to know what that manager does. But it's kind of two managers in a row now that you have to look at the team and say you have not got the best out of the players. And if that is the case, then what is the underlying issue? Is there a mentality issue amongst some of the players? Is it perhaps that they haven't got the squad right in terms of the balance between players that want to be starting, players that are happy to be rotated, all that kind of stuff? But at the moment, I think they are suffering from underperforming big players, the likes of Pavlidis, Kotchu. I'm sure there's a few others. Even Aktürkoğlu's not, he's kind of dropped off a little bit. Makes things difficult because when you spend big money on players, you need to play them and you need them to perform. And when they're not performing, that's a real issue. That means the players stop kind of perhaps believing in themselves, buying into the manager, all these kind of things that can start to spiral. And I think that's kind of where Benfica are at the moment. We know how quickly things can spiral at that club. Not necessarily because of the fan base, but just because of the nature of the expectation that's on the players and on the manager at all times. And when I look at Benfica at the moment, I just look at a club worried about what the next problem is going to be, worried about where the next kind of issue is going to come from, rather than looking forward to the next victory, believing that they're going to walk into a game against a team like Casapia and kind of blow them away in the way that we know they can. I mean, yeah, Andrew, let me know what you think. But for me, I'm finding it hard to kind of pinpoint it down to one or two things. It just seems like with Bruno Lage coming in, it hasn't fixed all of the problems that were there under Roger Schmidt. And now, despite kind of a bit of positivity when he came in, we're starting to see that, it's a cliche, but a new manager bounce fade, and maybe those problems are kind of coming back. Similar ones that we were talking about under Schmidt, to be honest.
Yeah, the Benfica team have had a sort of balance problem within their squad for a while, I think, anyway. And when Bruno Lage came in, there was definitely an over-reliance on Di Maria. He got them out of a lot of sort of sticky situations. And he's 36. You can't keep relying on him to sort of be the driving force of that attack. When I look at this Benfica team, I'm not sure where the chance creation is meant to come from. The midfield for this game was Florentino, Leandro Barreiro, and Kökçü. And you think Kökçü is the guy that's supposed to sort of be the midfielder that creates those chances, but I don't think he has the quality to really do that. And like you said, Aktürkoğlu's dropped off. He's a decent player, but he can only do so much. Artur Cabral is a striker. I like Artur Cabral myself, but he's not clinical. He's not really what you need. Because he's going to need like five chances to put one away. Pavlidis, good, but sort of in flashes. So there's definitely an issue with the attacking side of it. They're not creating enough chances, not being clinical enough. And there is an issue with the defense as well. When you're not defending correctly and you're not scoring goals, then you're going to have trouble. And that's what they're dealing with at the moment. I don't get why he's playing Tomás Araújo as a right back now more than he has been. He's been playing as a right back quite a lot. I don't know if this is like some Pep Guardiola-esque sort of let's get as many centre backs in there as possible or something. But I mean, maybe it's just the fact that I don't really like Antonio Silva. I think he just makes too many mistakes and he's not really worth that. So yeah, they've got a lot of things to figure out. There was some brief talk with João Felix maybe returning on loan. They need something like that, but not João Felix. That's just Jorge Mendes's PR machine, I think, trying to get a move for his player. But there's players out there. I mean, a guy that I've always wished had gone to Benfica is Ricardo Horta. You know, if that was going to happen, it would have happened a couple of seasons ago. I think it's too late now, but he's the kind of guy, a guy that can take it upon himself, can drive that attack forward, and has the quality to stand out and be the guy in that team. And there's other examples. He's just one, but that's the kind of guy they need. I think they're going to have to bring someone in because I don't think they have that person at the club at the moment.
I think one of the reasons Arujo's been playing at right back is a bit more, or just being squeezed into the team, is because he's arguably one of their best forward passers. Like, particularly when you look at the midfielders in front of him. I know, like, Manu Silva was brought in from Vitória's sort of slight hint of that, although I don't think he is that exact player. But yeah, I think it, once again, it comes back to huge recruitment issues. I mean, Sheldrup's sort of worked his way back into this team recently, but then obviously he didn't play for this game, and he looks like a winger who's at least be able to create stuff himself, more so than Arda Turan at the moment. And then yeah, it feels like we're talking about the same old things really. But I guess maybe looking at it in the broader sense, it's the way the league's panning out. You know, it felt like a few weeks ago we were talking about how close the top of it was, and now the gap now is up to, is it 7 points, 6 points? 6 points. So, like, you know, this is, we're getting into sort of, I feel like Sporting have turned their corner and starting to get further ahead. Benfica had an opportunity to keep up with them, and it, I don't know. It feels like they need to be active again. I don't know if in the window, I don't know if they will, because it does certainly feel like there's a personnel issue there at Benfica. Well, yeah, let's move on, because I feel like, yeah, we have had similar conversations. I think to round things off though, like on this game in particular, is to sort of bring it back to that first point I made about it was back in the 1930s when Casapia last beat Benfica, and how monumental this is. I think there's something special happening there this season. João Pereira looks like he's going to be the new golden boy of the Portuguese league, because you know he's doing everything right at the moment. So yeah, a huge result for Casapia against Benfica. Well, let's move on to. Oh,
I
sorry.
did notice one thing, an interesting thing. I mean, I found it interesting anyway. Leandro Barreiro, who won the penalty. So, of the eight penalties that Benfica have won the season, he's won three of them.
Oh, wow.
How crazy is that? He's not a striker. He's not in the box very often, but he's won three out of the eight. The other five penalties had all been like no one's won more than one, basically, except for him. So, I thought that was pretty interesting because you don't see that kind of thing. It's like a
No.
weird sort of,
Yeah. Oh well, that is an anomaly. Okay, well let's move on to Sporting, who have, you know, kept that, or let's say increased the gap at the top to 6 points now, with a comfortable 2-0 win against Nacional. Goals from Trincão and João Simão, who came off the bench. They look like they're settling into Rui Borges' system. Some players have come in who perhaps weren't getting as much time under Aaron. I'm looking at Fresneda at right back. I think that, and yeah, I guess Rui Silva in goal has been an obvious improvement, and an easy one to make, but one that Rui Borges has made. But yeah, talk to me about how. You know, I feel like we're talking about Sporting being back at the top again and being comfortable, but you know, 2-0 win against Nacional at home is nothing to write home about, but there's still positive signs.
I mean, it's not necessarily an easy game. I mean, we've seen Nacional take points off big clubs recently, but nonetheless, a game that you'd expect them to win. I think the thing for me, Bonnie, looking at this game and the other results of the big three, and Porto will come on to next, I'm sure. But it's amazing how they've managed to steady the ship, or at least how. What's surprising me was just the inability of their rivals to have taken advantage of. Such a huge blip. It's like we're not even talking about João Pereira anymore. Like that whole part of the season just almost doesn't even matter. They're back to being 6 points clear at the top of the table. But it's important to remember, like, what an insane period of the season that was for Sporting. And the fact that, like I said, their rivals didn't take advantage. Benfica and Porto are still dropping points. And to his credit, Rui Borges seems to have brought in some stability, steadied the ship. I wonder if Andrew will agree with me on this. But I'm still not super impressed by Sporting under him. I'm not sure how to put it. I'm not exactly blown away. I don't think the formation changes have really added to their game. I don't think it's really allowed any sort of elevated performance from any new players particularly, except maybe you could look at someone like Eduardo Quaresma at right back, who seems to be doing quite well, and Fresneda, who's now getting an opportunity. But nonetheless, they are back to decent consistency, winning games that they should be winning. And I thought it was a decent performance, 2-0. Trincao, great goal, wonderful strike, deserves credit for that. And yeah, Gerard Samoa, really nice. I thought it was a really nice moment, and he was clearly very emotional. I believe it was his first goal for the club, I'm assuming, for the youth academy product. And yeah, he was emotional when he scored, and then when the game ended and he'd scored, you know, the goal to seal the game, he looked really really emotional, which was quite touching to watch. So yeah, as you say, the game is kind of less interesting than the what it means for the title race at the moment. But yeah, I mean, Andrew, what do you think? Because I don't think we've really discussed Rui Borges in detail at Sporting, but it looks okay, but it's not all that for me at the moment.
I have to agree, they're not as shiny as they used to be. They haven't been for a while under Rui Borges, but he was meant to come in and steady the ship. It's exactly what he's done. He's getting a tune out of this team, albeit not a very exciting one. it's clear that move to the back four is kind of working. I would be interested to see how they cope with a more attacking team, a team that'll press them more. Because at the moment, Diomande and Gonçalo Inácio, they have time on the ball, and it's just the two of them. They're probably still used to having that third guy in there. So we'll see when they play against one of the bigger teams. And in the Champions League, I think they have one more game left in the Champions League as well. He's doing a decent job. He's doing what he has to do. The Trincão goal was incredible, but that first half was terrible. It was so boring. It was honestly one of the most boring halves I've seen. That goal sort of lit a spark, and it made the last 2 minutes a little bit better, because then Jokeris had a chance right afterwards. And then the second half started, and then it was a different game. But it was a very boring game, and that's because they were up against a very defensive-minded team, a very well-drilled and organized team, and Rui Borges just found a way to get through that. So, so you know, kudos to him, because it is a new shape. You have someone like Quenda, who's now playing as a winger, but you can see there's a lot less space, because the old system meant a lot of space in the wings. That doesn't really exist now. They kind of have to find that space through a different type of movement. But yeah, it's good for Fresneda. I think he's quite good. He looked decent, and he was never going to get a chance under Amorim.
Yeah, well, I think the main things for Sporting is what Andrew said, is stability, which is what they very much needed. I think maybe we can start to look at, I think Jokeres is out for the next two games, Bologna in the Champions League, and then Ferenc, and then it's against Porto in the leagues, where he might be a doubt. And I think, was it Conrad Harder played the other week, and was it, how many shots did he have without scoring? Was it like 30 or so? So maybe that you know, that could be an area. But otherwise, I think across the pitch, I think we're starting to see signs of, well, a few signs of improvement. I like the left-hand side. I think Araújo at left-back feels good. I think, actually, and that comes with Fresneda offering that balance. I think when Albert talked about Quaresma playing at right-back, obviously, naturally a centre-back, so much more defensive, and maybe the left-back was asked to go up a bit more. But with Araújo in that left-back position, and actually Fresneda offering a bit of both as well, I think that does give a good dynamic to the team. So I think it will be interesting to see Sporting going forward. I think they, you know, like I said, 6 points ahead, that's a healthy lead now. Any thoughts about Nacional, guys? Because they're not doing too bad, I think, for a promoted team. They're 19 points now, and that's 2 points above Estrella in the playoff, relegation playoff spot. I think they've done all right. I think I like the defence. They play five at the back, and I think there's a few good players in there. Um,
Sorry,
go ahead.
sorry. I'm gonna let Andrew come in because I know Andrew has actually some probably something serious to say. I'm just laughing, Barney, because how many times on this podcast have we said, "Do you know, I actually quite like this like low ranked team who play five at
Do you know what it is? I think the main thing why I like him is the kit. Let's be honest.
They do have a great kid.
Yeah, you know they got players there: Bruno Costa, Jota Go. Like, you know, they got some of the old boys in. But seriously, I think there are some talented players in that fence. I'm looking at the right back Garcia and Ulises. I think is a good centre back. If I was going to pick any of the promoted teams, I perhaps felt that Nacional, having seen them in the top flight before, were going to be the weakest. And yeah, I think they've done themselves fairly proud so far.
Yeah, so Thiago Margarido is a manager that I'm quite interested in. You know, I've been watching quite a bit of Nacional this season. They play that five at the back. They've got a really good defensive structure. They don't let a lot of goals through, although, you know, obviously it still happens with a team of their quality. But a lot of these players are new players as well. You know, I looked into the players that he had when he got promoted, and almost none of them are still there. I thought Ulisic had a really good game, even though obviously they lost, but he was, you know, tremendous at the back, and he's an old dog now. But yeah, they have that really sort of defensive structure, and they play a lot of transitions. And that's maybe not the most attractive way of playing, but it's a way of playing, and it's working for them. And I do think Thiago Margaridou has a bright future. It's, you know, maybe not in a João Pereira type of way, in this sort of exciting attacking way, but he's quite pragmatic. And if there's ever a sort of manager that can be successful in this league, it's a pragmatic one, because there's a lot of teams that sort of still play that way in the Portuguese league.
Yeah, I haven't got much out of Nacional, but I totally agree with that on Margarito. I think I can see him again. I don't want to damn with faint praise, but I mean, he's you look at the likes of managers who've gone on to manage clubs like Vitória, you know, Luis Freire there now. I feel like that trajectory is definitely something that he could emulate. And yeah, I agree. I agree with the sentiment that although they lost the game, Nacional have perhaps punched a little bit above their weight in terms of where we expected them to be and where they are now, which deserves its own credit in a way. But yeah, perhaps not the most eye-catching game from their perspective.
Okay, well, let's move on to the last of the big three, with Porto drawing at home to Santa Clara 1-1. Santa Clara leading for most of the game, goal from Gabriel Silva from the 33rd minute. Porto then equalised with a goal from Otavio, the centre back. And then, was it the last kick of the game, or very, very close to the end, Galeno with a missed penalty, which would have been a quite, well, that would have taken them just a. Two 4 points behind Sporting in first. So a real wasted opportunity. Of course, new manager, or potential new manager, sorry, correct me if I'm pronouncing it, Ancelini, the Argentinian coach,
Anselmi, Martín
Anselmi,
Anselmi.
thank you, in the stands as well, watching over this. He's soon to be announced, although I think they've got to iron out the paperwork. But yeah, let's start with you, Andrew. Give us your the full debrief of the Porto situation.
It was two missed penalties by Galeno, so that
Excuse me,
makes it even
sorry.
worse. It was two missed penalties. So Porto, they created a lot of chances. They struggled to put their chances away in this one. You could see a lot of the key players are really low in confidence. It's so obvious. There was no Nico Gonzalez, no Eustaquião, and no Samu for this game, and it was quite obvious that they were needed. They are three starters and three important players. Dennis Gould tried his best up front, but I thought he was quite wasteful. It's weird because it's not really like the defense were bad. You know, there was only one shot on target, but it's the one that went in. But the sort of scenario around that corner that they scored was so schoolboy. You know, like, we've all played football. We know, you know, when defending a corner, you look around and you make sure everyone's got a man. That's the most basic thing. And Gabriel Silva, who's the striker, he's the lone striker. He's Santa Clara's only centre forward, and he's in the box on his own. And he gets that opportunity to finish. It's a great finish, but that's the sort of thing that I think a team that's maybe higher on confidence, and a team that has more leaders, because I think that's what this team really lacks, is leadership on the pitch. You know, someone back there, centre back, looking around saying, "Hey, who's covering this guy? Do we all have a man? What's happening?" And I think they lack that at the moment. And It's really such a tough one to sort of put your finger on because we had a lot of chances. Galeno, I'm not a big fan of player missing a penalty and then taking another one in the same game. I've always
Definitely. I
disliked that.
completely agree.
I don't know why they do that. And again, leaders, if there was a leader on the pitch, he would go up to
Yes.
him and say, no, this is the last kick of the game. This is for the game. Someone else, Fabio Vieira, you come here, or Alan Varela, you take this. So I don't understand why they let him do that, but he did it. It is what it is. He's a good player. He's so low on confidence, and it's really easy to hate him at the moment. And there's a lot of sort of hate towards him, towards Pepe, and obviously now towards the sort of hierarchy, you know, Villas-Boas, etc. But the squad is missing that sort of person to drive the team forward. I thought it was going to be Fabio Vieira. It's not. It wasn't him, unfortunately. But we'll see what happens with the new manager. I did a little bit of research. I don't want to go on about him too much, but it's quite an interesting appointment because I was looking into which managers have gone straight from Liga MX to a big European league. And Portuguese league is a big European league. Don't believe what they say. It definitely is. And there's only one guy that did it. His name is José Aguirre, and he went from Pachuca to Osasuna in 2002. So it doesn't happen very often. And I mean, when they go there successfully. He went there successfully. He was there for a few seasons, etc. At the moment, his Cruz Azul team aren't doing very well, but they've been to the final of the Clausura. They finished second last season. So he's a good manager. He's very flexible, plays with very like a bunch of different formations. So he seems like a good young, exciting manager, and I guess that's what Villas-Boas wants.
Yeah, it's yeah, I mean, I like what you said. I don't know too much about the new manager, but of course the fact that they changed the manager in itself is interesting. I mean, Andrew, you're a Porto fan. I mean, if Galeno scores that penalty in the 96th minute, does Vitor Bruno keep his job? Does he deserve to keep his job? I mean, I apologized last week for making one of the worst calls made on a Portuguese football podcast this season when I said that Porto were after 17 games, Porto were best placed to go on to win the title. Actually, was it 17 games, Barney, or was it sort of a little bit less than that? Anyway, it was a terrible call. Quite clearly, Vitor Bruno wasn't quite what Porto needed. So yeah, it's interesting. Of course, I understand that they let him go. Interesting that they've replaced him with another kind of inexperienced manager. You might have looked at the situation and thought, as you say, with the kind of lack of leaders on the pitch and with the lack of confidence, maybe someone more experienced would have made sense to bring in. That said, there's no reason why a young manager can't reinvigorate a team with new ideas and new optimism and all those kind of things. So yeah, we wait to see what the impact will be. Just my thoughts, my two cents on this game. I don't want to be too harsh, so please tell me if you think I'm being harsh, but I feel like this kind of sums up Galeno a little bit in why he probably won't be that top player in the world of football. I think he does lack something in terms of mentality. Again, I really don't want to be harsh. I've never taken a penalty in a professional game. It's probably really stressful and hard, but to miss two in one game, I think shows a lack of. I mean, missing one penalty is understandable. It can happen to anyone. I think, as you say, Andrew, to miss two, of course, that decision could have been taken out of his hands, but also he has to have the kind of mental fortitude to understand when it's time to step up and when to give it to a teammate. I think equally the goal from Santa Clara, you look at João Mário, and I think how many times we've seen João Mário switch off in a defensive situation. And again, is that, you know, another player who has some kind of deficiencies which are holding him back in terms of his development. There's one or two players like that in and around the Porto squad, which perhaps it's easy to point that out when they've just drop points, and you know, I wouldn't necessarily be saying that after a big win, but yeah, I think it's disappointing because there's clear weaknesses in this team, and perhaps we're seeing now with the benefit of hindsight how much Conceição was doing to kind of hold the team together and elevate it in a way that perhaps he wasn't given credit for. And then when you have a manager like Vitor Bruno who lacks the same kind of leadership, strength and the ability to drag his players over the line, that those weaknesses are a little bit more obvious.
What I will say about Galeno is he's He's like Pepe. I think he's a player of moments. He has flashes and he's very impressive. He has sort of short spells where he's very good. I haven't seen him sort of put 15 games together where he's good in every single game. And that's really what you need at the top level to be, you know, one of the best in certainly in the Portuguese league. You know, you think about the greats of this league, you know, Luis Dias or your like Falcao, you know, these kind of guys. These are guys that played throughout the season, did really well. So that's an issue. As for the manager thing, Vitor Bruno, it was his first job as a manager. And Villas-Boas knew that. It wasn't like he found out after he'd appointed him. He knew and he decided to sort of go this project route. So to go the project route, you need to be patient and you need to understand that it's not going to be easy. You know, what was the expectation? That he wins the league in his first season? Like, what is the expectation? Vitor Bruno was struggling for sure. The players were kind of turning on him a bit. He didn't know where to turn. It was difficult for him. But I would have liked it if they did give him some time. But, you know, they've moved on from him. We support the new manager. I'm excited to see what he does. He's quite a bit more experienced than Vitor Bruno. He was also in Ecuador before Mexico. He won like four cups there. So he's won things before, you know, in an inferior league, the Ecuador league. You know, I don't really know anything about it. But he's clearly a manager that has some ideas. And Villas-Boas is trying to do things differently. He's been trying to do things differently since he's walked in the door, you know, as president. And fair play to him. And you're not going to get them all right. But I think he needs this to be right. He needs this appointment now to work because then it's going to be like, what are you doing? Do you know what I mean? What's going on? It's two managers in a row, sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think you make a really interesting point, and it is good to point out kind of how quickly things can change in football, because we were all saying the same thing at the beginning of the season that there were low expectations for Vitor Bruno, and it's interesting how things that happen at other clubs can affect different clubs, because you know I feel like Ruben Amorim leaving suddenly opened that door to both Porto and Benfica to the point now where being 6 points behind Sporting now feels like a bit of a failure, whereas being 6 points behind Sporting when Ruben Amorim had Sporting playing at the peak of their powers probably would have been par for the course, and it wouldn't have been too disappointing. So yeah, I think that is a really interesting point that you know for Vitor Bruno perhaps fortune wasn't on his side, and maybe in a different you know parallel universe he's given more time and become successful. But I think it probably was right to move him on, because I thought he looked like he didn't have he looked like he didn't have what it take to be Porto manager, if we're being blunt about it. And if they were kind of saying, well, we'll give him at least a full season to see what he can do, then fine. But the fact that they pulled a plug, I wasn't too surprised, or to be honest, I didn't feel like he was too hard done by.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Santa Clara then, who are still find themselves fifth in the table on 32 points, 5 points behind Braga, 2 points above Casapia in sixth, who we talked about earlier. But I mean, Santa Clara are having a really good season. Gabriel Silva, of course, the goal scorer in this game, catching a lot of headlines. A lot of people are talking about when he'll be at one of the big clubs. For me, though, I really like the midfield. I'm looking at like Klinsmann in particular, who I can't remember where he was before, was it at Portimonense? But you know, a really interesting player. I think quite tidy on the ball. But they have a lot of, you know, really quite good quality players. Yeah, like I said, I think the midfield is the one that really stands out for me. Yeah, I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on Santa Clara, if you think they can keep it up, if they can sustain this to the end of the season, maybe sneak in.
Well, I will just chip in that for me, it's a great point for Santa Clara and a really good result. But I do think we have to be fair to Porto and say, in the last 30 minutes of this game, Santa Clara had a player sent off and conceded two penalties, and they still got away with a point. So I think they've done pretty well from that perspective. Perhaps, you know, in reality, they would have lost the game. That said, it's been a fantastic season, and this will, when we look back on this season, this will, you know, we won't remember those details. We'll just remember this as another good result against a big team for a club in good form. Whether they can sustain it, of course, I hope so. I mean, I think with any newly promoted team, we do see every now and again one of these newly promoted teams have a great start to the season and put a fight for the top six together, which I think they're doing admirably. I think they're probably a bit Disappointed that there's now some other clubs breathing down their neck with the likes of Casapia and Estoril, who we're going to come on to, who, might spoil their party a little bit. But whatever happens, I think they've already had a great season. It's not going to get worse. They're not going to get sucked into a relegation battle. They can stay in the top eight. I think they've done incredibly well. And maybe the dream of Europe is still alive. We'll have to see. But I think, we've already seen them dropping points a little bit. Like they lost against Estoril recently, which is a game they probably would have wanted to win, obviously. But look, I mean, a good point for them. And like I said, when we look back on this result at the end of the season, we won't look at those details like the red card and the penalties. We'll just see another good result, of which they've had a few.
Completely agreed. A huge point for them after a bit of a wobble because they did drop some points recently. This is maybe their sort of worst run of this great season that they've had. This wasn't a particularly good game. I agree. They kind of got lucky, but you have to ride your luck sometimes, and you also sort of do things on the pitch to try and get the luck going your way. So you sort of defend a certain way. You do certain things on the ball, off the ball. They were able to steady the ship. They keep a hold of fifth place, but yeah, there's a lot of teams now sort of catching up to them. They're an impressive team. Whether this team can stay together past the season, I'd be very surprised. I think there's quite a few players that we'll see in other teams in the league. But yeah, really good for them.
Okay, well, let's move on to our last game of the week. And not to blow our trumpets again, Albert, but I think in the sort of preview show last week we did, the Patreon special, we did tip Estoril and both Casapia to have, to be the teams in form at the moment. And Estoril really well with a 1-0 win at home against Vitória, really sort of pushing Estoril right up the table and putting Vitória down in seventh on just 26 points. So that's 4 points behind Casapia and 6 points behind Santa Clara now. So yeah, I've been excited. I feel like we've never done a big dive on Estoril. We're excited in the summer at the prospect of a Scotsman taking charge and Ian Cathro. It took him a little while to get going. We thought he'd be out the door, but he's been given the chance. He's put a team together now that are looking as good, if not better, as that Estoril team that did so well a few years ago. Players like Holsgrove is back in the league, looking at his best. Partnered really nicely in the midfield with Xhaka, who, thinking about it was actually a really good signing for Estoril. It came was
Definitely.
coming coming was coming from Lille, playing in Ligue 1 for quite some time. Similar player in João Carvalho, another player of really good experience, playing in lots of big leagues, and they've managed to keep him up with him scoring. I saw an image of him celebrating in the long sleeve Kappa kit, and it's just, I don't know. I
How can
thought,
you not love
yeah,
it?
how can you not love it? I mean, I want to hear your thoughts. I feel like Cathro, there's players in there that have taken a bit of time to warm up. Him himself took a little while, but Holsgrove was out injured for a lot of the beginning of the season. Xhaka took a while to come in. Looking at the back line, Basha was an interesting signing in the summer, coming from, was it the Austrian second division or top division? But a player who I remember looking into his history, who in moments in his career was quite hyped, injuries or whatever got in the way, but that sort of signing where they've seen something in him in the past, and now they're able to get the best out of him. I think it's a really good team. Interesting, another team playing three at the back, which seems to be quite a successful formation to play in this Portuguese league. But look, the wing backs good play well. I've talked about Wagner Pino a lot. It's Ian Cathro has done really well, I think, getting this squad together, finding the players that fit his system, and now they're playing some good football, and this is a good win against Vitória.
Yeah, well, firstly, I think you're absolutely correct to point out when we get something right, because we get so much wrong on this show. There's so much misinformation and dodgy opinions that when we finally get something right, it's important to remind people that it does occasionally happen. But I actually don't think this was that difficult a result to predict, to be totally honest. I mean, mainly because Vitória are in a sort of sticky moment themselves. You know, well documented what happened with Daniel Sousa and Luis Ferreira coming in. Obviously, he's a good manager, but you know, listen, they're in a bit of a sticky patch at the moment with their managerial issues, shall we say? And Estoril in good form. In fact, this was their third consecutive win in the league, which I think is a fantastic result. It doesn't feel that long ago that we were talking about them as relegation candidates. As you say, Barney, we were talking about how long Ian Catherwood would last. I'm sure I saw rumours that he had been sacked after 4 or 5 games. I'm very glad that that wasn't the case and that he's still in the job. And we haven't really had a chance to talk about him properly. So it is nice now to be talking about a win and a good win against a good team. Let's not forget that Vitória are a very good team. You mentioned loads of players, Barney. I mean, João Carvalho is the one. That goal was fantastic. If the listeners at home haven't seen it already, definitely dig out the highlights because it's a lovely sort of mazy run. He almost goes down at the end, doesn't he? He gets a kind of clip from a Vitória defender and he almost falls, but he manages to kind of poke the ball past the keeper almost halfway on his way down. And it's a great goal. They only needed a one goal, but it was a good win. I don't think Vitória had too many chances in response. Like I said, I think it's unfortunate for them because it has been quite a turbulent time and they are, as I said, with Santa Clara, in danger of being caught up by a few teams now, whether that's Casapia. I mean, they have already been caught by Casapia, excuse me, but you know, in the long term they're in danger of losing their sort of top six or even top five place to the likes of Santa Clara, Casapia, now Estoril, and maybe one or two teams will sneak up on them if they're not careful. Yeah, but as you say, buddy, very, very pleasing result for Estoril, and I'm pleased to see them doing well because it always seemed like a little bit of a project, but some of the signings have been quite smart and they look to be doing well. So listen, all power to them. I'm happy to see them performing well.
Andrew,
Yeah, go on, sorry.
no, you go ahead. I was just going to ask you what your thoughts.
I was just going to say, yeah, you don't see a sort of old-fashioned sort of swashbuckling run like that from,
No.
João Carvalho does. You don't see that very often. It was very impressive, great quality. But yeah, so I don't know if you remember early on in the season, I was on the podcast and we spoke about Ian Cathro. He had just been appointed. And if you had to tell me that, in January we'd be sat here and he'd be eighth with Estoril, I wouldn't believe you. I really wouldn't, because
Absolutely.
just it didn't seem like it was going to work. I thought, no, this guy's going to be out the door soon.
I'm not
They
sure I
were,
would have believed it 6 games ago, 7 games
yeah,
ago.
true, and he did have some issues with some players being injured, and he kind of had to make it work. And he there were some performances where they got a result, they got a point here, a point there, and it wasn't always pretty, but now it looks really good. Rafi Gatan is back as well because he was at Braga, wasn't he? For a while, he's back now. So that's important. If you can keep everyone sort of fit, I think they can go on a great run. They've got a pretty good sort of run of fixtures coming up. They're only 2 points behind Vitória. Yeah, really, really impressed with them. And as for Vitória, they're in trouble. Luis Ferreira needs to find a solution. They're bleeding points at the moment. And they haven't won a game since the 12th of December. I don't know if you guys saw that. That's insane. I couldn't believe it when I sort of looked it up today.
Well, yeah, I was going to say they're not only bleeding points, they seem to be bleeding players. I think that's one of
Yeah, true, 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 true.
that's the thing that I feel most worried about for Vitória. I think Jorge Fernandes, I think, has been pitched at the airport today, probably moving to the Middle East. But yeah, let's talk about for a little bit because I think Luis Freire coming in. It feels like the squad's already completely different, and their youthfulness is, I think, was on display in this game. They seem to be making a lot of money, but they don't seem to be wanting to spend it just yet. Like the, so yeah,
This is
we've
something
seen this
that
before, have we not?
I was going to say. This is literally the Vitória, like this is their playbook. Every single time they put together a promising squad of players, and they have a good manager, and there's some promise, and you think, wow, there's finally some progress from one season to the next, and then everyone goes, manager's gone, players get sold, and then you just see that sort of same cycle. I feel for the Vitória fans. They've got this great fan base. They don't deserve this because every single season they're a selling club, and they're They've remained that selling club, even though they now are owned by, 46% by V Sports. The Aston Villa owners, you'd think they'd sort of be looking at progress as opposed to profit. And I know you got to do what you got to do, but it's so disappointing because, again, that early episode when we spoke about Ian Cathro, we were talking about Vitória, who were on this great run at the beginning of the season. Rui Borges was doing really well. It was so promising. And now we look at them and it's kind of sad. They might finish eighth, ninth, who knows?
I mean, I know it's. Sorry, I did I committed the biggest sin in podcasting by Googling something while we're recording. But I just wanted to look up Vitória's departures in this season alone. And if you include Jota Silva to Nottingham Forest, it's a reported 45 million euros of sales this year alone, which
Wow.
is astounding numbers for a club like Vitória. But will they spend 45 million euros back? Would they spend 10% of that on players? You know that we know they want and they won't. Excuse me. And I just think, look, they can rely on their academy for so long. It's a great academy. It's produced some good players, and
For sure,
a
yeah.
gift to that club. And they have made some smart signings. But I agree with you, Andrew. I sympathise with the fans. I mean, can you imagine what it would be like being a Vitória fan, seeing all these players leave for that amount of money, seeing the club slipping down the table, sacking a manager after 7 games? It's just not great. And they're still in Europe, and they've done well in Europe. Credit to Rui Borges for that, because he was the one who got them to where they are. But they lost Rui Borges to Sporting. So it's been a difficult season, to say the least. I do sympathise with them a little bit. But to make a serious point, I just want to reiterate a point that I made. This does have real consequences, because they are in danger of slipping down the table. That's the real take-home message here, is that, it's all well and good putting money in the bank. It's all well and good. I mean, it is great funding their academy, don't get me wrong. But at some point, this club has to decide whether they want to actually make an impact in this league. And it doesn't seem like that's what the commitment is at the moment from those upstairs. They've done great work with the academy. They've done great work buying and selling on players. Those are great things. But guys, when was the last time they made an impact in the Primeira Liga? Not that recently. And I think that is an issue
No.
for a club like Vitória, because that's what the fans really want. They don't really want to sell their players for big money. They want to prove that they're one of the biggest clubs in the league, which they believe they are. I know they can be, but they've not shown it. So yeah, that's the biggest shame for me.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the front three in this game for Vitória. Arangio, who I think they signed from Tondela, who yeah, it's shown glimpses, but never looked like a player who's going to light up the league. Nuno Santos, ex-Benfica player who they signed from a club in America, but I don't know, he's a midfielder rather than a winger. And then they've brought, and then it's a young Canadian striker from the Academy du Mercy Michel, who I think got a goal and it was in Daniel Souza's first game. But I don't know. It just seems like, when you see the midfield behind, which I think all three of us at some point this season have praised in Samu Handa and Silva, that feels like a good midfield. And it's just everywhere around that now seems to have been decimated. And they just seem, not in a very any strong position. So I think it's going to be tough running for the season for Vitória. And yeah, they really need to evaluate about who they're going to be. Who knows, though? We've got like, was it 3 days left of the transfer window? Maybe some big names might come in. I'm trying to think of big ex Vitória players,
I've
but
heard Marcus Edwards is looking for a new club.
Rafinha's out of the question. Yeah,
Marcus Edwards, yeah.
I'm not sure that's the career trajectory he had in mind.
No. Right, well, there you go. So I think that's all we've got time for this week. Albert and I are about to hop on to record our Patreon special to get a bit more in-depth chat from some of the topics and a few more. So yeah, please join our
Marcus
Patreon
Edwards might be one of those, Barney.
for sure, for sure. Yeah, so check out our Patreon if you want to listen to that, which comes out this week as well. Andrew, thank you very much for this week. Thanks for coming on. I'm trying to think of just before we wrap up, because obviously me and Albert are the two up top strike partnership that's working well. I'm trying to think what are you the new guy coming in trying to I can't think of a good Portuguese.
Well, you said you're a keeper, Andrew.
I am a keeper, yeah. Am I Rui Silva? No. Well, he just got here, I guess Rui Silva.
True.
But Oh yeah,
Do the obvious improvement we needed. That's it.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
I'll take that.
Yeah, well, thanks very much for coming on, Andrew, and thanks, Albert. I guess that leaves me safe. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.